dodging tax bills and depriving the world's poorest countries of billions of dollars.
One major way they avoid paying the tax man is by parking their profits overseas.
They're in the trying not to pay any more tax than possible business, and business is good.
Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. Most multinational organisations now shift some profits to tax havens, and of course they pay less tax as a result. But are national governments serious about harmonising tax rules to stop this happening, or do they really just want to grab more of that shrinking pot of tax revenue for themselves? New data shows that competition between governments to attract these profits, even while they complain about the system that allows it to happen, has for many years been helping to erode the global tax base. Thomas Tuslov, Ludwig Bier and Gabriel Zucman, the authors of a new NBER working paper called The Missing Profits of Nations, have concluded that non-haven countries steal revenue from each other while letting tax havens flourish. Now, two of those authors are joining me today from the University of Copenhagen to explain why this is happening and how big these missing profits have become. Thomas and Ludwig, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
We hear regular stories about how global companies are using these tax havens. Can you put this into context for us? How much less are these companies paying in tax today compared to, say, the beginning of globalization?
What we've seen through the past 10, 20, 30 years is that the global taxation of multinational profits has fallen and fallen as a share of their profits. Actually, we've seen that, for instance, the effective tax rates on US-owned firms has halved since the 1950s. Meanwhile, the multinational companies worldwide have become more and more important to the global economy. Their share of global profits has increased tenfold since the 1950s. And most of this has happened in the last 10 or 20 years. We believe that one of the big reasons for this is the increase in profit shifting that we have seen since the 1980s until today. We see that a larger and larger share of multinational profits are booked in tax havens. For American companies, we've seen an increase from less than 20%, something like 15% in the 1980s, up till more than 60% of American foreign profits being booked in tax havens today, which of course is definitely going to decrease their effective taxation. So our estimate for 2015 is that multinational companies worldwide pay about $200 billion less taxes, which is something like 40% of their entire tax base, or 10% of all taxes that we get from all companies in the world.
How do you estimate the amount of tax that's lost due to shifting profits to tax havens?
What we do is that we try to get a good estimate for economic activity in multinational companies and compare this with where the profits are booked. So what we use is wages, and we see how much the booking of profits deviates from the wage payments that we see. And if they deviate a lot, which is the case in many tax havens, we basically say that this profit has been moved there from elsewhere.
So there's basically no work being done there. It's just a profit that's been booked there. Which countries are the winners and losers from all of this?
So the big losers, they are really the high-tax European countries. And ironically, the European high-tax countries are losing because of other European member states. So in particular, Ireland, Netherlands and Luxembourg, they managed to artificially attract a lot of European profits. And by doing so, they actually make the EU lose 20% of their corporate tax receipts. Now, the winners are obviously the tax havens. Again, taking the case of the EU, we have that Ireland, Luxembourg, Malta and Netherlands. These are the countries that actually managed to collect the most taxes. And they do this despite having very low single-digit effective tax rates. So they have these very low effective tax rates, attract enormous amounts of artificial paper profits. And by doing so, they end up collecting a lot of corporate tax receipts. Now, it's important to notice that when you combine the gains of all the tax havens and compare that to the losses of the high tax countries, it's still a negative sum game. For each dollar the tax havens win, the high tax countries lose $5.
Ooh. Now, the traditional justification that's used by policymakers when they lower these tax rates in developed countries is that this will attract investment to their country. or else it's going to stop manufacturing from moving abroad. For example, in the recent US corporate tax cut, President Trump described it as a jobs bill. How accurate is that picture today?
Well, for it to be a jobs bill, it's important to understand that you really have to have tangible capital moving around. You have to have machinery coming to your country, factories being built. And the idea is that if this happens, this will increase worker productivity, increase wages, increase employment. Now, what we find in our paper is really that the first thing that happens when you cut corporate taxes dramatically is that you attract paper profits. The largest thing that happens is really that you attract artificial profits. And of course, artificial profits are not machinery or tangible capital moving to your country. It seems to be a second order effect that you actually attract tangible capital. So an important case here is the Irish case. What we saw in the end of the 90s to the beginning of the 2000s was that they cut their corporate tax rate from 40% to 12.5%. And as a result of this, we saw paper profits pouring in, but relatively little capital moving with it. This is, of course, an important observation, right? Because it questions whether you actually manage to attract real activity when you cut your corporate tax rate, or if it's only a game for artificial profits. That being said, we really need to let time show whether the American tax reform will actually increase worker productivity and worker wages. But so far, the data suggests that it's mainly a game for paper profits.
And if it is paper profits moving around in a general case globally, rather than directing capital investment, this is effectively just a race to the bottom on tax.
Yes, that's true. But that would be the case no matter if they were competing for just profits or profits and capital. But that also means that in any case, what we're dealing with is basically a coordination failure. It's a sort of prisoner's dilemma, where if you lower your own tax rates, either if you believe that you actually attract capital, it will increase wages and profits. If it's not the case, you will just increase your own profits. In either case, it's going to be a race to the bottom. The big difference is whether it actually affects wages or whether it only affects where the profits are being taxed.
You've come up with some fairly startling comparisons between countries when we look at corporate profits as a proportion of wages earned. The difference in the heights of the bars on the graphs that you're drawing is remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really remarkable. So we computed this simple key statistic, which is just the profits per wage paid. So you could see it as a corporation. What is your return to each dollar you pay in wages? And what we find is that in all high-tax countries, this ratio is roughly 50%. So for each dollar you pay in wages, you get 50 cents in corporate profits back in return as the investor. When you go to tax havens, it's not 50% return on your dollars paid. It's suddenly a full dollar back you get for each wage dollar you pay. Now, if we then go to Ireland, Puerto Rico, and Luxembourg, the ratio is more like 250%, so five times as large as what we see in high-tax countries. What is then further startling is when you actually divide companies into multinational and domestic companies. What we then find is that, for example, in Ireland, multinational companies are managing to get an 800% return per dollar they pay in wages. In Puerto Rico, they are able to get 1700% return on each dollar they pay in wages. So suddenly, we see these incredibly high returns on employment or wages paid in these tax havens. And of course, what is striking is that we're not seeing these high returns in the domestic part of the economy, so domestic firms operating in these tax havens. And then finally, when we look at the high-tax countries, we see the reverse, that multinational firms suddenly do not appear to get any return on the wages that they actually pay in countries like Germany, France, the US.
Given these figures, it's not surprising that politicians in these non-tax haven countries talk a good game about cooperating to harmonize tax regimes. For example, the OECD has been campaigning on this for several years now. But your research also seems to show that these countries, in reality, are putting most of their effort into competing with each other rather than cooperating.
What we say in the paper is that the system that they have agreed upon is not one that incentivizes cooperation at all. So all the harmonization and the cooperation has been going on, but has created a system in which each country fends for itself. It's basically a free-for-all. The way that this system works is that each country has to try to find the tax base it has lost around the world. This means that basically if Denmark tries to get tax base back from Germany, for each dollar it gets back, it's worth the same as if it tried to get money back from, say, Luxembourg. The problem here is that it's much easier to get money back from Germany than from Luxembourg. And the system that they are trying to audit is so complex and so full of gray areas that no matter which company you go after, if it's just a large company, you will be able to find some tax that should have been paid in your own country that has simply just ended up somewhere else by mistake. So in the end, what we actually see is that 90% of all cases that are being done in the EU, that is all cases where the tax administrations are trying to get back tax base from other countries, 90% of those cases are between high tax countries in the EU. And about 10% are towards havens and low-tax countries. A strange fact about the Danish cases that I know because I've been sitting in the Danish tax administration is that I can see on average, we actually lower the global tax bill of companies by doing these cases. So for each case we do, the companies that we audit, they pay less taxes on a global scale. I believe this is probably the case in many countries around the Europe and the world, simply because it's easier to get back money from a high tax country than from a low tax country. Also, the company is not going to fight you in court for that.
One outcome of this that's of interest to economists especially is that national statistics become distorted, things like GDP and productivity. How big is this distortion? Can you give some examples of it?
Yes, so I think one of the most striking facts, which was also noted by Paul Krugman and created kind of a public outroar, was really when Ireland's GDP grew by 26% in 2015. And when the Irish people looked around their country, they couldn't really see that the economy had grown by a quarter. What really proved to be the case was that a handful of US firms, they had on paper moved their intellectual property to Ireland. And of course, this doesn't really make sense. How do you move your intellectual property? It doesn't exist in the physical world. But well, in Ireland, they on paper recorded that suddenly now they had an enormous mass of intangible capital that was now being stored in their country. And it actually left the ex-governor of the Central Bank of Ireland go out and say that the conventional use of GDP is now being mocked by multinational corporations. So this is, of course, a very striking example. But moving to the broader picture, what we also see using our estimates is that the growth of the capital share since the 1980s in the US and the EU has been dramatically underestimated. So even these important findings, which is something that economists put a lot of attention to, which is, for example, what is the division between the compensation of capital and between labor, what we're seeing is that the capital share in the EU has actually increased by twice the amount recorded since the 1980s. Another example is how a quarter of the US trade deficit is really an illusion of tax avoidance. And that is, of course, particularly relevant as the current Trump administration benchmarks their trade policy using the trade balance, which is in part a fictitious statistic.
The scale of these distortions is extraordinary, but for ordinary citizens, what effect does it have on them?
I think that there are three main ways in which this affects ordinary citizens. The first one is the very real amount of money that's lost, the $200 billion in taxes worldwide that need to be either found somewhere else or need to be cut from the public spending. That is going to be felt. So what has historically happened is that we've increased VAT, that is, we've just increased the price of all goods by taxing it all. The second way in which it affects people is it gives an unfair advantage to very large corporations, to the very large multinational corporations. It's very difficult for small and medium-sized firms to compete with a multinational that does not pay any taxes for obvious reasons. And the third, less tangible way that I think it affects people is that it makes people think, why should I pay taxes when the biggest players in the economy don't? I think it can undermine the whole belief in what the tax administration is doing. If they're not collecting taxes from the biggest companies and the biggest sources of income, then why should I pay taxes?
Global cooperation doesn't seem to be having an effect, and there's a lot of economic nationalism around at the moment. So do you expect corporate tax revenues to keep falling like this?
Global cooperation is really the solution. The problem at hand is that it just haven't occurred really yet. We have the OECD and the G20 nations going together with an ambitious plan to do something about this. But in the end, it just isn't enough. We need a much more radical change in the way that we think about corporate taxation. And we need to realize that when you're taxing multinational corporations, you need a system that is dealing with multinational corporations, and it is not trying to slice these companies up to different domestic pieces. If we don't see this change in the next 10 or 20 years, well, then it's very easy to see that the corporate tax will eventually just die. If we look just in the last 40 years, the average global corporate tax rate has actually halved. So if you just do a trend line and see what is to come, well, then there's no reason to believe that something would magically change. And what we're trying to say is that there needs to be radical reform, or otherwise we just won't have a corporate tax anymore.
Final question. Say you had the power to make some change. Is there anything practically that you would do to get us out of this equilibrium?
So as we've been discussing with the different European commissioners, we really think that there's only one way forward, and that is to do global formula apportionment. So it's really a simple thing to do. It's to say the problem at hand is that we're trying to tax a global firm. We need to start looking at this firm globally. We need to record what are their global profits, and then we need a simple allocation key to determine which countries gets to tax what part. So right now, the rules and legislation is so complex that no one really knows where the multinational firms are supposed to be taxed. We need to dramatically simplify these rules. And for example, just say that if you have 5% of your sales in France, well, then France gets to tax 5% of your global profits. This is not something that is far from reality. This is really close to the proposal that the EU is currently trying to get into effect.
And a bonus, if you introduce something like that, is that we actually avoid this whole transfer pricing industry that has grown into a huge player in the world economy. We have more than 200,000 people employed fully, doing nothing else than trying to understand the current rules. So it's many, many, many billion euros every year that is just being spent on trying to price internal trades correctly. And by introducing something like what Ludwig just talked about, the CCCTB from the EU, we would basically just say you don't need to document any internal trades of your company. You can just say what the result was. I think a lot of companies would be very happy not to pay the big four accounting firms for these long reports.
Thomas and Ludwig, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Research like this is a great way to make sense of what often seems like a pretty confusing news. So a reminder that the paper is Torslov, Vier and Zuckerman, The Missing Profits of Nations, and that's NBER Working Paper 24701. And there's also a Vox EU column of the same name. If you've listened this far, you'll know why the Vox EU column has been one of the most popular on the site in the last few weeks. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. You can now find us on all major podcast platforms, and our archive is always available at voxeu.org/vox-talks.